This is Cousin Creepy speaking backstage at the Sports and Entertainment Centre to John from the Red Hot Chili Peppers. John, welcome to Triple R.
Hi.
When the Red Hot Chili Peppers started back, I know it's before you joined, back in the early 80s, does Lee or Anthony go on about the sort of being the sort of band that they were against the sort of backdrop of early Californian sort of hardcore?
I don't think they were part of any kind of hardcore scene, you know. I mean, the hardcore punk scene in L.A. pretty much peaked in like 3 years before the Chili Peppers even got started. So I don't see them that way, and I don't think anybody else saw them that way. You know, to me, they were just a really original band who just had a much different approach to music than anybody else that I knew of, and they had a good balance of naivete and of conviction, you know, and that's what appealed to me about them. They've never really been the sorts to brag about themselves. I was much more in tune with what they meant to the LA scene than they were, because I was a fan, you know. They were just human beings, you know. To me, they were like stars, you know, so I had a pretty good perspective on that without anybody telling me.
Well, what sort of feeling was that to sort of be, to change from being a fan to sort of being a member of probably one of your favorite bands?
It was really something to adjust to, you know. It took me about a year to even start, you know. The first year that I was in the band, I was just like, I wasn't acting like myself, you know. I wasn't living my life to be John Frusciante. I was living my life to like be what I thought a Chili Pepper should be. And you can't approach being a rock star like that. I don't think a person can approach it by trying to see what their image is like and to be that. I think you can only just be yourself. And if that ends up becoming an image to the public, then it does. But the main thing you've got to do is be true to yourself and dress like yourself, act like yourself, and do the things in life that you feel you're good at, that you were meant to be doing, and make yourself as good as you can be at them. To me, that would have been once I started doing that, everything, you know, was on the best course it could be. But the first year that I was in the band, I was really kind of confused, and I didn't do that. I just ran around and got drunk, picked up girls, that kind of thing.
That's just normal band activity.
Yeah, 18-year-old activity, you know, I was 18 years old. But it's not, it doesn't go anywhere, and it doesn't fit with my personality, you know. My personality is much more at home, either with one person, you know, or playing my guitar, or writing songs, or recording music, practicing guitar, making myself better, expanding my understanding of art, you know, and of different musics. That's more the kind of stuff that I'm about, you know.
I see. Now, the Red Hot Chili Peppers have worked with a wide variety of producers, especially with Andy Gill, Gang of Four. But what I'd love to know is, and do you ever sort of get any of the other members telling you about the experiences they have with George Clinton at all?
Yeah, he sounds like, you know, he sounds like he made it fun for them, and I think he captured a really good vibe on the album Freaky Styley that he produced. I have a pretty good idea of what he was like to produce them. He'd dance around and he'd scream into the talkback microphone and stuff, and they had a good time. They partied a lot, you know. Yeah. It's like he was fun to work with in that way, but you know, he was doing a few things at once as well. He was working on his own solo record at the time and stuff, you know. But we found that for us, like, we need a producer to be like pretty much devote a few months to us, you know. That's what Rick Rubin does when he works with us. If he's doing something else, it stops at least a couple of weeks before we go into the studio, because we need to feel like we've got somebody's undivided attention, you know.
When it comes to covers, the Red Hot Chili Peppers have covered a broad range of styles. Is there any sort of criteria which the band looks for in a song to sort of before they cover it?
We didn't cover any songs on this new album, you know, and we didn't record any for fun or anything. So we, you know, live we played little tidbits of things, like we play a little bit of London Calling at one point in our show, and sometimes we go into, you know, we'll go into like this funkadelic song or that funkadelic song. A lot of George Clinton music comes up, you know, from time to time.
Being a huge fan of funkadelic, what sort of is the funkadelic song of choice?
Well, we have a medley where we play the song "Year to the Turtle" into "Cosmic Slop" by Funkadelic. Yeah, we do a bit of "Cosmic Slop," and if we used to do "If You've Got Funk, You've Got Style," which was fun. Sometimes we play "Red Hot Mama."
Yeah.
And we did that with Snoop Doggy Dogg, came up and rapped over the groove at, when we played at some sort of awards show in Las Vegas.
Did he do the opening part of
"A luscious bitch, she is true, but it's not nice to fool Mother Nature."
He just made up his own rap about that he was rocking with the Chili Peppers and stuff. You know, it meant a lot to me though. It was fun. And yeah, we used to do "No Head, No Backstage Pass."
Oh yeah,
yeah. Yeah, we've done quite a few. We used to do "New One."
It's just for you. Even if you don't feel it right now, don't mean someday it'll turn you out.
Standing on the verge of getting it on.
Yeah, we would do that. We had, like, Anthony would say, you know, "Flea, what you doing? Standing on the verge of getting it on." You know, we'd answer, we'd do the call and answer thing. Our sound man would sing it.
Cool, okay. On one hand, you've had a background of doing covers, but you had the All Saints do "Under the Bridge." What was your sort of reaction to that?
I haven't heard it.
Haven't you?
No, not me.
Well, they actually sampled "Under the Bridge" to do it.
Right. I've heard about it, and I've been asked about it a lot of times in interviews, but I've never heard it, so I don't know what to say. I've met one person out of like 60 people tell me that they liked it. You know, I met a person recently. They said they liked the All Saints version. So, but most people tell me that they don't like it.
I know that you haven't done "Lollapalooza," but how was the sort of general consensus within the Chili Peppers as it compares to "Big Day Out"?
I don't know. I think everybody really likes doing the "Big Day Out," and I haven't heard anybody make a direct comparison between the two. I think they're probably set up much differently, you know. Nobody, I haven't heard anybody compare the two, so sorry.
When it comes down to videos, the Red Hot Chili Peppers seem to have a very distinctive style of very strong focus on their videos. Is that an obvious criteria when it comes down to the video making?
When a band, you know, when with us, it's like none of us are filmmakers, and so it's not as if anybody in the band actually is making the video, you know. It's always a director, and it's always the director's vision, but we've got very, you know, we've got very strong opinions in the band about what's good and what's not good, and if we hear about an idea and it's not good, and it would be the kind of idea that would lead to, you know, a stupid, ridiculous video, it's usually, you know, it's not going to get anywhere with us, you know. We won't accept it, you know. So I would say because Anthony and Flea and myself, we all have very strong ideas about what's good and what's not good, and what's cool and what's not cool, and so we end up, you know, for the most part, having videos that, in general, are good, you know.
Yeah.
But that's more the reason, not really because of what we're able to create in the visual world, but what we you know, what we know isn't good. It's more like the thread, you know, that runs between it all, you know.
Having listened to Californication, in parts it reminds me of what everything has happened to LA music in the past 30 years. Is, you know, Californication the fucking together of LA culture and music in one?
It is, if that's what you want it to be, you know. I think with that interpretation of the title, you're definitely following the line of what the word's supposed to do, which is supposed to marry two ideas that normally have fall into separate pockets in your head and put them in one pocket, you know. That's what the word's supposed to do. But the song, you know, is very much about Los Angeles, like, from, you know, even though it's a place that just sits in one place, the various ways that it reaches out into other parts of the world, you know, even though as a place it's just sitting there, it ends up coming into stretching all over, you know, all parts of the world, you know.
In what way did leaving AMI and going over to Warner's, how did that change the Chili Peppers?
Well, we weren't 100% confident with EMI at that time. We wanted our record to do as well as we knew that we were going to make a good record with Blood Sugar Sex Magik, and we just wanted to make sure that it sold as much as it was possible for it to sell, you know. We didn't feel that EMI was going to get us across to the public that well, because they didn't have any bands that we felt any kinship with, you know. Warner Brothers had Jane's Addiction. We saw that they did a good job with them, you know. EMI, they had pop, you know, commercial pop music. Yeah. Like, you know, it just gave us a certain amount of freedom and put us in sort of a warmer atmosphere to feel comfortable about giving our music.
And at the time of recording Blood Sugar Sex Magik, was there any real feeling at the time that you were doing something special with this album?
Yeah, ever since we started writing it, I could feel that something really special was going on with it. I felt that we were in tune and going the same direction and coming from the same place as a large group of spirits that we wanted to give more life to and more of a place in this dimension. And that's what I felt like my job was, you know, and I knew I was doing a good job at it right from the beginning of the writing process, and it just got more and more exciting the more we wrote and the more we recorded, you know.
Well, because the album,
when we were recording it just felt like every note was in the exact perfect place that it should be, and I felt like I was, you know, I felt like I was in more than one place at once, you know.
Because the album ended up becoming really one of the first real early 90s crossover albums. What was that kind of feeling that you got from the album, knowing it crossed so many borders in terms of crossing over fan bases?
I had a feeling, you know, I had the feeling that the degree of sincerity which we were putting into the music and the amount that we cared about the music and just how much variety there was in it. You know, my image always growing up, you know, just a few years before that, of things that were real popular was always like, you know, like the best thing that was really popular that I knew of was like Van Halen. And that was still a very kind of artificial rock starish kind of thing. With Blood Sugar, I felt like we were doing really like, you know, music that I normally think of as being music that would never be extremely popular, and then it ended up being extremely popular. It was interesting, you know. I mean, now we're used to it because, like, Kurt Cobain was, like, the greatest thing in the world, and he was also the most popular thing. But when I was a teenager, I didn't picture it ever being like that. I thought, well, always, you know, the real popular things are the kind of lame things, and the cool things are not so big, you know.
You finished the album with the Robert Johnson track of their Red Hot. What was that decision to sort of do like a very old blues song but to give it an updated feel?
Well, I was listening to Robert Johnson a lot throughout the time we did it, the album, but that was just like Flea called me one day and said, I think we should cover this the Robert Johnson song, the Red Hot. It was just an idea he threw at me on the phone, and you know, I was really into blues at that time, the acoustic one-man kind of blues, like the Lead Belly and Robert Johnson and Blind Blake and, there was a lot of good guitar players, you know, at that time. I much prefer that kind of acoustic blues to the electrics full band blues, you know. It's exciting and innovative to me.
Excellent. Well, John, thank you very much for chatting to us, and all the best on the rest of the big day out tours.
Thank you.